Well, welcome back to our last
part of this series, Joy No Matter What. Yeah, I was, for the past 48 hours, yeah, we know that the snow is coming. So I think, oh no, whether we will be able to meet together, I pray. But I also pray that, God will give me another week. I can preach next week. Well, thank God we're all here. Good to see so many of you. Despite, I don't know, is there any snow outside? Or maybe the snow will come later. We don't know. But let's focus on this next 30 minutes, or maybe less, as we conclude this series, Joy No Matter What. At the beginning of this series, if you still remember, it was 3 weeks ago, Pastor Carson has introduced an equation, an happiness equation. You still remember this slide? Happiness is equal to or greater than the quality of life minus your expectation of how life should be. If life is greater than my expectation, then I'm happy. If life is less than my expectation, then I'm unhappy. But the problem is we realize this equation is that we have no control over the quality of our life. And even though we would like to believe that, we do. And when we have no control over our life, then we have no control over our happiness as well. So, facing all the reality, all the limitation, all the setbacks in life, our question tonight is, how do we keep, not just be joy, to be happy, but also be joyful? How do we keep our hope and be joyful? I'm sure we all have dreams, right? So let's start with think about dreams. Having a dream vacation in Paris, maybe? Getting into your dream program in UBC. I don't know what program is your dream program. Or receiving a dream job offer from Google or Microsoft. Think about that. Or buying a dream house in West End. I don't know whether you like West End, but I was told it was the most expensive place in our area. Or marrying your high school sweetheart and planning your dream wedding. Think about that, all the dreams. And we all believe that life will be perfect and we'll be satisfied, happy, and content if we have reached certain level of salary, if we have secured certain position at work. And some of us, I just say some of us, might even believe that after graduation, if we work hard enough, I was told that someone have that formula, it will only take you 15 years. Think about that. Well, 15 years, not too bad. To earn your first 1 million. Do you believe that? Well, it sounds ideal, as we all know that. Life in 2023 are not that straightforward. Definitely is very different, right? And I also heard there's another calculation. Someone in a financial planning company in Toronto just did some math to find out how much does a household, which equals two adults plus one kid, if they live in Toronto, they didn't do the math in Vancouver, but it's based on Toronto, how much they have to earn to be considered middle class. Well, middle class, I don't know whether you're in your mind, but at least it's pretty stable, right? You're not in the grassroots, you are not the most rich and famous, but at least you're in the middle. And here are some breakdown figures. Well, I tried to make it big enough, but you don't worry about, but just want to give you a list from mortgage, property tax, utility, to transportation expenses. You can see all those figures here. From our ESP, retirement saving, plus grocery, daycare for the kid. And guess, I want to have a guess. I don't know whether you have good math. Yeah. What would be the total? How much do you need to earn in order to be defined as the middle class? Next slide. The cost of a middle class lifestyle in Toronto is $145,000. Well, this is after tax too. So think about that. If only one person work, I don't know, usually maybe the male work, he would need, that company told us, he would need to earn a gross income of about 237K per year, because they would net him 145K after all the CPP, EI, and income taxes. I'm sure if you receive your paycheck, you know there's a difference, right? So if you need to pay that, you need to earn even more. So 237K if one person works. And if both parents work, they will have to each earn 99K gross income. They would net them each 73K after deduction for net household income of this 145K. That's quite a lot. And this is in Toronto. I'm sure if they do the math in Vancouver, it will be a little bit more. I don't know how much more, because we all know that our standard usually is quite high compared to the other part of our Canada. We all have dreams, but making the dream come true is never easy. And talking about dreams, let me share with you a story of our family dream vacation. I don't know whether you remember, slightly a month ago, I shared about a Disney trip, but this is a different one. This is finally my family, not my parents' family, okay? Destination, Disney World at Orlando, Florida again. And this time, the year is 2011 in June. I look for this photo. This is our family. I couldn't find a real good one, so I kind of combined them together, but they are together, right? Our oldest son, it's too bad I didn't, you know, give any advance notice. So embarrassed, it might be embarrassed for 10 seconds. He was only turning 10. I almost forgot that. Our second daughter was slightly younger. And then Chloe, she was still a baby, traveling on a stroller all the time. We always joke about that, you know. Yeah, she's the one, to Disney, but I'm not sure how much memory she had. From It's a Small World ride, you heard about that, right? At the Magic Kingdom, to the Tower of Terror, the elevator drop ride. I don't know whether Caleb remember that. Our trip to Disney was really a dream come true. Yes, Disney World, you know, yeah. I don't know, I'm sure now they have much newer, all the rides, probably even more fun, right? So this one was slightly 10 years ago, was it? Or 11 years ago. But there's a but here. Dream vacation. Wow, Florida. Wow, everything is perfect, right? But a few days later, after we arrived in Orlando, something happened. One of our kids got sick. I forgot who got sick already, but I just remember one of us got sick. And instead of lining up for the rides, guess where we were? We were lining up to see the doctor. And also because, you know, we're in the States, right? I forgot how much we have to pay just to see a doctor, maybe $200 or something like that. And then a few more days later, another kid got sick. Imagine, you know, we are in Disney World. We're supposed to have all the plans, you know, every day we'll go to different attraction, right? So in the middle of the trip, we need to make a tough decision. We decided to cut the trip short. We need to cut short our dream vacation, and then we fly back to Toronto at that time. I'm sure even our family, once in a while, we look back, we always have to regret, what happened that year, you know. And despite of all the trip excitement, our dream vacation did not end on a high note at all. Well, that's life, right? Life is full of unexpected turns. limitations, restrictions, setbacks. Sometimes even surprises, accidents, or even misfortune. So church, even though sometimes we put 120% in our effort, how often are we able to achieve everything as we wish? Even though you thought you have tried your very best already, how often are we told that our best is simply not good enough? Well, this sounds like from some movie, right? At this crossroad, our natural feeling or our natural emotion will be disappointment. We may feel discontent, we may feel defeated. We simply do not want to keep going. We just want to quit. So facing all the limitations, all the setbacks in life, how do we keep moving on without losing hope? And is being joyful still a possibility? I think that is what we are going to ask this evening. The Apostle Paul was actually in a similar situation. Paul was used by God in a very mighty way. Paul planted churches everywhere. Paul went to places, cities that even the apostles never went. You know, Peter was much, less mobile. But Paul went to different missionary trips and cross-culturally he planted churches. Wow. But unfortunately, as we have been studying the book of Philippians for the past 3 weeks, when this letter to the Philippians was written, as we all know, Paul was not drafting his letter in his comfortable study, from his home, right? He was stuck in a prison. And who knows how long it takes for Paul to be released? Paul didn't know that too. So tonight, let's take a closer look at the last chapter of Philippians and see what can we learn from Paul about his secret of sustaining joy. The secret of sustaining joy. So we'll be reading from Philippians chapter 4, verse 10. I rejoice in the Lord greatly that now at length you have revived your concern for me. You were indeed concerned for me, but you had no opportunity. Not that I'm speaking of being in need, for I have learned in whatever situation I am to be content. I know how to be brought low, and I know how to abound. In any and every circumstances, I have learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need. I can do all things through him who strengthened me. I can do all things through him who strengthened me. At the beginning of this passage, Paul shared about his own joy. I rejoice in the Lord greatly. He further explained that he was joyful because the church at Philippi had revived, has renewed their concern for Paul. And the concern is not just something abstract, but actually they are giving him financially and also significantly as well. So this is the part of the background of the story, right? Even though Paul was in prison, but they were able to support him through financial support. But Paul quickly clarified one thing in verse 11. Not that I am speaking of being in need. Or in NIV, the version, I'm not saying this because I am in need. Paul clarified that he was not saying this because he needed anything. He is not needing any of their money. He wanted the church to know that his reason of being joyful was not because his material needs are being met. Interesting, right? If you receive money, you'll be happy, right? But Paul had a different reason about joyfulness as well. So on the contrary, God has put him through a tough school, like a training school, where he learned one of the most life lessons. And the key word tonight is contentment. And talking about the topic of contentment, actually, many other philosophers at Paul's time also talk about contentment. Do you know that? In the minds of the Greek philosophers, contentment is based on self-sufficiency. Contentment is coming from within. Contentment is not affected by the external situation. So you try to be trained, you know, to be content by yourself. However, Paul has a totally different view about contentment. So let's take a look how he defined that. In verse 11, Paul told the church that, "For I have learned in whatever situation I am to be content." Paul did not choose one as the way of life. Rather, he learned to accept whatever came his way. The apostle, in verse 12, the apostle shared that, "I know how to be brought low, and I know how to abound." What does that mean? On another version, it said, "I know how to get along with little, and also know how to live in prosperity." Right? For example, if you're living paycheck by paycheck, you know, in the beginning of the month, you know, you feel that you are usually, I don't know, in this cycle, right? You feel rich for 2 weeks, and then you feel poor at the bottom. And then, okay, look for, wait for the next paycheck day, and oh, you feel better. So, but for Paul, he knows how to live, get along with little, but also how to live in prosperity as well. And in any and every circumstance, Paul have learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need. So he could survive in different situations. And then in verse 13, Paul declared that, "I can do all things through him who strengthened me." Of course, we know that Paul did not imply that, oh yeah, I'm a superman, I can do anything, you know, I can, you know, break the prison, you know, I can fly, you know. No, in the context, Paul implied that, or he referred primarily to living in want or plenty. And Paul finds Christ sufficient, both in times of bounty and times of need as well. Here, Paul's aim is contentment, not achievement. Paul's aim is contentment, not achievement. And rather than envision all that he can accomplish, Paul focuses on his responses to his circumstances, whether favorable or not. Paul had learned over the years that he is strong enough for anything. He can be brought low. He can abound. He can face plenty and hunger, abundance and need with enduring contentment. Not because of his own endurance, but because of the one who gave him strength. But because the strength he received from the sufficiency of Christ. That's a big difference, right? Yes, Paul had transformed his sufficiency from a self-sufficiency like those Greek philosophers thought that, to a sufficiency in Jesus. And this is the basis of everything that Paul's saying here. So, he is the secret. Paul did not shy away to share, so openly Paul shared that is his secret of sustaining joy and contentment. Paul can do all things through God who strengthened him. Paul has this strength for everything in the one who gave him power. And he can face all situations by the power of Christ who gives him strength. And God has enabled Paul to face everything with the strength that came from above as well. So, as we are facing all kinds of limitations, all kinds of setbacks in life, how do we keep moving on without losing hope? Is being joyful still a possibility? Yes, Paul taught us one thing tonight. Joy is more about contentment than achievement. And true contentment can be experienced in whatever situation. When you are with someone, especially I make it capital, rather than have something. True contentment can be experienced in whatever situation. When you are with someone, rather than have something. As we're concluding our series about joy, no matter what, let us end with a time of self-reflection. We have heard a lot already from Wayne, from Carson, and also from Pastor Jeff, and tonight. So I'll give you some space to reflect. Reflection number one, about joy and contentment. We talked a lot about joy and contentment this evening. Let's do a mental exercise together. If you're still in high school, I'm sure one from high school. Think of the moment you were accepted into your dream program in the university. It could be UBC, it could be Harvard, or I don't know where else. It's your dream program. If you are in college or university, think of the moment you started your first day of work in your dream company. It could be Microsoft, could be Google, or you name it. Will achieving these things really bring contentment? Will you ever be satisfied by them? And what if you don't get it? Does it mean it is the end of the world? Reflection number two. When was the last time you felt peaceful and content? Try to remember the details, the where, the when, peaceful and content. And who was in that picture? Think about that. Your best friend, your girlfriend, your boyfriend, maybe. And in much of the same way, imagine going through your current situation with Jesus the Lord. True contentment can be experienced in whatever situation when you are with someone rather than have something. Reflection number three, and this is the last one. Where do I find my anchor? Each person needs an anchor, as we know. An anchor is a dependable, stable, secure base that you can hold on to. Anchor is something that keeps you firmly planted, no matter what winds or storm may come. As we are heading into the rest of 2023, let me invite you to anchor your life in Jesus. Just as what Paul said in Philippians chapter 3, He counts everything as loss because of the surpassing worth of knowing Christ Jesus, my Lord. So pursue Jesus and you endless pursuit in knowing Him. And remember, as you find your anchor in Jesus, your relationship with Jesus is able to keep you joyful and hopeful in the midst of setbacks and limitation. Find your anchor in Jesus.